Calorama, a recorded books/hybrid imprint, presents News and Democratic Citizens in the Mobile Era by Joanna Dunaway and Kathleen Searles. Read by Kim Nimi. Publisher's note: this audiobook contains references to figures, tables, and appendices present in the print and e-book editions of the book. 1. Gaining access and losing information. Mobile phones are ubiquitous. Approximately 80% of U.S. adults say they use their smartphones to access news sometimes or often. And most of the popular news websites now attract more mobile visitors than desktop visitors. The majority of Americans don't just own smartphones. They increasingly rely on mobile devices for internet access. Many are abandoning home high-speed broadband service entirely, opting to depend on their smartphones instead. The mobile era is here, and its embrace by politicians, campaigns, the news industry, and the public has far-reaching implications. In this book, we examine the consequences of mobile proliferation for the ability of democratic citizens to get the information they need. The wide and growing reach of mobile internet access creates the potential to erase lingering digital divides. Whether mobile communication technologies realize this potential remains in dispute. There is little doubt that mobile communication technology is expanding the scope of physical access to news and political information. And yet, there are two seemingly conflicting accounts for what this means. The first account lauds the expansion of mobile access, because it affords more people access to the internet. It depicts mobile devices as a stopgap for those without affordable access to quality high-speed internet, which varies across geographic, socioeconomic, and political boundaries. Extant research points to gains in mobile use by young people, those with lower incomes, in rural settings, and in racial and ethnic minority groups. The second account suggests mobile devices are not the great leveler they are purported to be. Quality high-speed internet access facilitates seeking news online and gains in political knowledge. However, evidence suggests that mobile-only access is not a sufficient replacement. Information seeking and processing are more difficult on mobile devices relative to computers with high-speed internet connections. As a result, mobile users engage in fewer capital-enhancing activities. Searching for information and learning from mobile devices is also challenging. Information is hard to find and more difficult to recall on mobile devices. Cord-cutting respondents from Pew's Internet Project report that abandoning high-speed wireless access makes keeping up with the news much more difficult. According to this account, those dependent on mobile devices for internet access are part of an emergent internet underclass, or second-class digital citizens. What accounts for these two differing explanations of the impact of mobile devices? We argue research on mobile technology and democracy has yet to seriously consider the different ways in which mobile devices structure access to information. We address this issue by reviving an important distinction between physical and cognitive access and applying it to the case of mobile news. Physical access to information refers to the extent to which technological infrastructure, the adequacy of hardware, software, and connections, market offerings, and costs associated with obtaining and using communication technologies afford the opportunity to encounter information. Cognitive access refers to the ease with which information is processed once exposure occurs. Building on this early work in media effects, we consider the possibility that even as mobile technology increases the opportunity for exposure, it does so alongside increased constraints on information processing. Putting it succinctly, even if it is the case that mobile technology facilitates widespread physical access to information, the constraints it imposes on cognitive access limits information processing. This distinction between physical and cognitive access is important because it helps us accomplish two central objectives. First, it helps us reconcile contrasting descriptions of mobile effects by demonstrating that mobile can expand access to political information in some ways while limiting it in others. Doing so advances the literature on mobile communication technology. By situating studies of mobile effects in the context of media effects, a focus on physical and cognitive access also helps us attain our second, broader objective, which is to demonstrate the need for a new approach to studying technological change and media effects, one capable of accommodating changes to communication infrastructures and the proliferation of platforms and devices. In this book, we explore media effects in the context of today's high-choice and multi-platform media environment. In recent years, the media environment has experienced constant flux, populated by a dizzying array of platforms available on a growing number of devices of varying sizes and capabilities. Our primary interest is in how media consumption on these different devices and platforms affects the acquisition of political information. We investigate this question against the backdrop of the history of media effects research, with particular interest in an ongoing debate about the return of minimal effects, and amidst claims about the capability of mobile devices to eradicate lingering digital divides. We argue that today's array of platforms and devices are capable of structuring media messages in ways that affect their post-exposure processing. These effects can occur due to differences in message presentation born from the specific features of devices like mobile phones, as well as social media platforms like Facebook. Specifically, information communication technologies have important effects on the cognitive accessibility of media messages, with consequences for how people attend to these messages and ultimately what they can learn from them. As we shall see, despite advances in research on how technological advancements affect media choice and selectivity, existing theories of media and democracy have not evolved to provide an integrated framework to explain how communication technologies affect information delivery in ways that shape cognitive access, or the ease with which information is attended to and processed. This gap limits our ability to fully understand how fundamental changes in communication technology alter what we currently know about media effects. The theoretical contribution of this book is to address this gap. We draw on literature across several fields to develop a more complete theoretical framework that explains how communication technology structures both physical and cognitive access to information, and specifically the ways in which mobile communication technologies shape news consumption and effects. Although we apply the framework to mobile media consumption in this book, it can be usefully applied to other cases as demonstrated by examples in later chapters. Motivating this framework is the argument that technology affects the opportunity for exposure to information, including the motivation to avoid or choose it, and once exposed, how individuals process content. The latter part of this argument is an important revision to the Opportunity Motivation Ability (OMA) framework, which explained political learning from media as a function of a person's opportunity for exposure, motivation for consuming content, and their ability to do so. Importantly, OMA treats ability as a fixed individual-level trait, while we understand individuals' ability to process information as constrained by contextual and situational considerations. Our framework emphasizes that communication technologies affect the media environment, with implications for media preferences and consumption behaviors which operate pre-exposure, through market-level effects on media choice as outlined earlier. But they also operate through message content and structure, the effects of which occur post-exposure. We pose a framework based on physical and cognitive access, PCA, which we use to identify and explain important mobile effects in today's media environment, and which provides a means to develop and test expectations for the effects of changing communication technology. The PCA framework helps us advance theory by elucidating the relative neglect of attention and post-exposure processes generally in post-broadcast media effects research. After shifting our focus to address this gap, we develop a model to explain technological effects on post-exposure processing, PEP. Before we discuss the PCA and PEP in detail, we briefly situate our broader arguments in existing research. News and mobile technology. With each major shift in communication technology, observers have worried over how it affects what the public knows. An important consideration given an informed citizenry is a requisite for functioning democracy. News and political information seeking are important for civic life. For generations, traditional news media informed the public and enriched democratic citizenship. Recent advances in communication technology opened additional avenues through which those interested in news and information can be more engaged in civic life. Naturally, scholars and practitioners are interested in the democratic and economic consequences of changes in the information technology landscape. A robust literature on the political and civic implications of internet proliferation, for example, suggests higher levels of political engagement among those using the internet for news, exchanging information, and exploring interests. It is clear from this work that the next important frontier of technological change with democratic consequences is mobile. Researchers continue to speculate about the effects of mobile devices on a host of political and social outcomes, both positive and negative. A lot of early evidence about mobile technology suggests room for optimism. Research on mobile technology in developing settings, for example, finds several avenues through which mobile devices can improve digital inclusion and learning, economic development, and quality of life. Statistics on smartphone proliferation and wireless mobile access reveal steep gains in access among those historically disadvantaged by digital divides, prompting many to credit mobile as an important vehicle for inclusion and digital citizenship. There seems to be little doubt that mobile communication technology is expanding physical access to information. But we are skeptical about mobile's potential to eradicate lingering digital divides. We are particularly skeptical about the likelihood mobile proliferation will play a democratic role in producing a more informed citizenry. The problem with the idea that mobile technology, through sheer audience reach, will increase rates of political knowledge and participation is that it belies everything we know about the high-choice media environment. Mobile is a high-choice platform, after all, which means that by providing constant access to innumerable sources of both news and entertainment, its impact as a provider of political information will be muted by the simple fact that most of the public has a preference for entertainment over news. Even if people do choose to consume news on mobile devices, this perspective fails to appreciate how mobile devices structure and present information differently than television sets, radios, or personal computers. Additionally, mobile devices structure information in ways that make information harder to process and to seek out in the first place. And still, increased reach does not guarantee exposure, nor does exposure equate to attention. Mounting evidence, including the results presented in this book, suggests attention is more limited on mobile devices, offsetting some gains in physical access to news and political information. This trade-off between technologically driven effects on physical access to information and cognitive access to information is something media effects research has documented with previous iterations of technological change. Extant research shows how television news broadened knowledge for those previously unexposed, but weakened it for those who ultimately substituted television news for newspapers. Although previously untapped news audiences were reached with television, the depth of exposure was less than that for traditional newspaper audiences. Movement from the partisan press to penny presses tells a similar story. The literature on changing communication technologies and media effects is clear. The way communication technologies affect physical access to information is only part of the story. How the news is presented and how people process it matters. Placing mobile in the context of research on media effects helps us understand the impact of mobile technology on the media's ability to influence, and underscores the need to change the way we study media effects more generally. We situate our work in the history of media effects research next, before previewing our approach. This review of the literature provides insights integral to our call for integrating changes in communication technology and media effects. Technological change and media effects. Media effects research examines media impact on the mass public. It is particularly important for democracies, as democratic theory requires the public be informed of the doings of their elected officials, and the media is still the primary way the public learns of politics. It also addresses questions affecting the balance of power between elites and the mass public, with potentially profound results for media influence on public opinion. In this context, changes in communication technology matter for the public because they affect the costs of seeking political information. This is one reason why paradigm shifts in effects research have historically coincided with major changes in communication technology. Indeed, a century's worth of scholarship on media effects began with the arrival of radio and television, motivated by concerns over the persuasive influence of propaganda following World War II. Despite the rich history of media effects studies, the challenge of demonstrating the impact of mass media has proved daunting for researchers. As a result, decades of research reveal a pattern of dramatic pendulum swings about the extent to which media can influence opinions, attitudes, and behaviors. The theoretical, conceptual, and methodological challenges underlying this instability have varied over time, but a few notable obstacles have resurfaced at critical junctures. These obstacles can be characterized in three ways. One is to conflate access to information with exposure to information. A second is to conflate exposure to information with attention to information. A third is a disproportionate focus on how media affects persuasion and attitude change relative to learning, reinforcement, and other important effects. Over time, problems of measurement and method have been both a cause and consequence of these tendencies. Our call for a new approach is informed by these persistent challenges. Media effects in the broadcast era. Media effects research was premised on a conflation between access and exposure to information, one that misinformed the era of direct and powerful media effects. Responding to normative concerns about government propaganda and dramatic changes to the form and dissemination of media messages, researchers anticipated direct and powerful media influence over public opinion. Assuming audiences were eager and passive recipients of information, and that access to media messages was equivalent to exposure, they believed the reach and format of broadcast media would make its messages too powerful to resist. Magic bullet and hypodermic needle theories were developed to explain expectations for direct and powerful effects. Despite the early concerns about an all-powerful broadcast media and mass persuasion, by the middle of the 20th century, evidence casted doubt on this view. Studies showed that audiences are capable of making choices about what media to consume, according to their individual preferences and tastes. Focusing on what we refer to as pre-exposure processes, what occurs before individuals are exposed to media messages such as selectivity and choice, these studies, later characterized as part of the minimal effects paradigm, highlighted the difference between access and exposure to information. They showed that just because a new media technology expands access to information, selective exposure, the act of deliberately choosing specific media messages to attend to or ignore, means that access does not necessarily translate to exposure. Although now familiar, the concept of selective exposure was a radical departure from the assumptions of uniform exposure that characterized early work on media effects. During this period, selective exposure was cited as one of the key explanations for why media effects were minimal. Minimal effects studies were successful in debunking hypodermic needle theories, but they also produced an overcorrection. In response to a lack of demonstrable persuasive effects, media effects research shifted dramatically from predictions of massive and direct effects to the belief that media were capable of affecting the mass public only minimally. This shift occurred even as television proliferated rapidly into American households. Prolonged subscription to the minimal effects view was attributable to four things: a single-minded focus on persuasion, conflation between access and exposure, conflation between exposure and attention, and limited methodological approaches. The focus on persuasion that characterized early effects research was problematic primarily for its role in propping up the minimal effects paradigm. The pursuit of attitude change and the failure to find evidence for it supported the belief that media were rarely influential, delaying the discovery of other media effects until the 1970s. The era of minimal effects was also prolonged by the continuing tendency to conflate access and exposure to political information. While in pursuit of persuasive effects, researchers, studying campaign advertisements in particular, largely failed to account for message-level characteristics constraining the likelihood of people's exposure. A reliance on survey instruments led to the erroneous attribution of null effects to campaigns' inability to persuade, when it was just as likely a product of low exposure. A more pressing issue was the conflation between exposure and attention. Despite previous work showing that attention follows exposure, is not automatic, and is conditional on individual-level motivations and abilities, minimal effects studies consistently blurred the lines between exposure and attention. In doing so, this work assumed that once people were exposed to a message, they processed it. Null findings were considered evidence of an absence of persuasion, when they likely reflected message inattention. It was not until Zeller, motivated by McGuire's insights, reaffirmed the important distinction between exposure and attention that researchers began to recognize the need to account for individual-level and contextual characteristics when studying persuasion. Other researchers argued that audiovisual media could have powerful influence despite early failures to demonstrate direct and powerful media effects. They focused on indirect effects resulting from attributes of messages, such as production choices, and the newsmaking process, such as story selection. Iyengar and Kinder also helped demonstrate that limits in common methodological approaches were to blame for some of the theoretical and conceptual challenges that persisted during this period. Like Zeller, Iyengar and Kinder attributed persistent findings of minimal effects to the difficulty of accurately capturing individual-level news exposure. The inability to capture people's news diets meant that even accounting for political interest, researchers could never actually be sure about which media messages people were exposed to, or the extent to which they paid attention once exposed. Iyengar and Kinder argued for the need to introduce experiments to the study of media effects. With control over stimuli and randomization, experiments gave researchers the ability to isolate the causal effects of media messages, while randomization mitigates concerns regarding differences between the treatment groups. The control afforded by experiments also enables researchers to ensure treatment delivery and collect data on attention, ensuring no conflation between exposure and attention. Moreover, lab subjects typically abide by the instructions researchers give them, and manipulation checks offer a means by which to ensure participant compliance. By using these methods to demonstrate other important media effects besides persuasion, Iyengar and Kinder encouraged scholars to look beyond persuasion for evidence of media effects and helped usher in widespread use of experimental methods in studies of media effects. These works were among a key few that were fundamental to overcoming several theoretical and methodological challenges, contributing to a consensus that media are capable of powerful but limited effects. Indeed, the theoretical advances made during this period are owed, at least in part, to scholars' recognition of problems stemming from the conflation of exposure and attention in the study of media effects. Zeller did so by again elevating McGuire's insight that persuasion requires both receipt and acceptance of messages, both of which require attention. He also highlighted the role that motivation plays in exposure to political information, providing a reminder that access is not equivalent to exposure. Zeller theorized that minimal effects findings were a product of low exposure, low attention, or resistance based on predispositions, rather than the inability of mass media to persuade. People with high levels of interest in politics might be high on the exposure dimension, but low on the acceptance dimension due to firmly held predispositions. Alternatively, those low in interest are prone to acceptance, but are rarely exposed to political information as they are unmotivated to seek it out. By identifying the limited conditions under which persuasion occurs, Zeller reasserted the crucial distinction between message exposure and message receipt and acceptance. With these advances in place, by the time the broadcast era concluded, effects research evolved to a consensus that media were capable of producing powerful but limited media effects. Post-broadcast media effects. The expansion of media choice that accompanied the arrival of cable, and later the internet, disrupted the media environment. Cable marked a gradual but massive expansion of channel offerings into households. And as high-speed internet proliferated, those same options expanded to their online formats, accompanied by thousands of additional outlets for entertainment and news. Both cable and internet produced a rush of new media competitors in the marketplace, which created pressure for content providers to seek and meet unmet needs for niche programming. Shortly, more options emerged along both dimensions of news and entertainment, including partisan cable news networks. These changes had significant implications for broadcast-era researchers' understanding of media effects, and once again dramatically shifted the trajectory of effects research. This is especially true with respect to scholarly treatment of the relationship between access and exposure to information and their relative focus on persuasion and political knowledge. One of the most important advances from research on the high-choice media environment and the revival of interest in selective exposure is
sample complete. Ready to continue?